Welcome inside the Coach's Room, the number one podcast for football coaches that want to develop. Every week we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff to hear about their experiences, how they develop and how they develop their players.
Some of the stories are absolutely harrowing. You know, you wouldn't want your family to go through that stuff. So I don't think, you know, we should expect players to have to think about that balance, have to deal with some of the examples that their coaches are putting them through.
In this episode, we talk to Rebecca Sabiuk. Rebecca is the new director of football of the best sports university in the world, Loughborough University. Enjoy this episode with Rebecca Sabiuk. Okay, Rebecca, welcome inside the coach's room.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you. It's interesting that the director of, no, the new director of the best sports university in the world wants to use this podcast as a Zen moment.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks, and it helps just to sit quietly and talk about coaching. I do find these are the easy Zen moments rather than the driving and the face to face with players or people or staff, you know, or students. So this is my Zen moment. So thank you very much for this week.
Oh, well, let's try to create a Zen hour. But just for everybody who's listening, every time I try to talk with Rebecca, you get like voice notes from a car, like half shouting, "Oh, I'm so busy, but I'm looking for blah." This is how our communication went before we started recording. But okay, I have to be fair, I'm exactly the same. So it's like voice note after voice note. "Oh, I'm not looking, bye bye," and whatever. And yeah, this is how we started.
Yeah, I'm a big voice note fan.
Well, not many people are, actually. They find it annoying, you know? Well,
oh dear. Yeah.
Okay, but I like it as well. Okay, so I said it already, new director of football of the Loughborough University. Last week at Watford, this is at the Boys Academy.
Correct.
If I go through your Twitter feed, I see all kinds of things from women's football to boys football to player care. Well, I was preparing this. It was hard for me to find the right angle and where to start. Let's just start in your office like I always do. It's much easier.
Yeah, no problem.
And you packed up your office, so you brought five boxes of materials to show us. So what do you want to show first, or what do you think is most important to start with?
Yeah, so you're right. I've packed up my office last week. So what I did was I was just collecting a few things to share with everyone. So the first lot of books, really, I thought might say more about me, because these are what other people have bought me as leaving gifts. So the first one is a bit of an academic choice. This is Amy Whitehead and Jenny Coe's book on the myths of sports coaching. And I have picked up a few chapters already. It's brilliant. So okay, they just myth bust and disrupt, which I'm a massive fan of anyway.
Yeah.
And then a good friend of mine, Luke, bought me Robin Sharma's book, The Everyday Hero. And he wrote a little note in there for me, chapters that he thinks I would enjoy, which I thought was really nice.
That's efficient, so you can leave out the other ones.
and I'm a big Leeds fan. So one of my...
I saw it on your Twitter, because you had like, "Oh no, is this true?" And then you had five times Bielsa, and then... Okay, why?
I've always loved Leeds. It's kind of been, you know, my mum supports Leeds, and I followed them through their trials and tribulations. But I'm a huge Bielsa fan, so it's been difficult. I haven't watched them yet under Jesse, just because I'm a bit heartbroken still. Yeah. But I am going to Leeds Watford tomorrow, so I'm getting back. I'm going back to them tomorrow.
Yeah, almost like you have to find out how the new relationship is.
Yes.
First date or something. Yeah, yeah. Okay, but so Bielsa, you are a big Bielsa fan. Why?
Oh, he came to Leeds at a time when we were really low, you know, struggling in the Championship. And Bielsa picks, you know, a club on the place, its people, its potential. And for whatever reason, he selected Leeds. And I know, you know, before that, he either matched really well with his club or he didn't. And it ended, you know, in a day, 3 days, whatever. But at Leeds, it just clicked. And he stayed there, I think, the longest kind of Bielsa tenure. Connected with the people, you know, he'd just walk around Leeds. And I saw, you know, even like a great example is when he left the club, he still went down to just speak to fans, and it's his style of football. Do you know, you could, I was really lucky enough to go a few times and watch Bielsa's Leeds, and it was electric. It was high energy, 1v1s all over the pitch. And as a Leeds fan, football, it's the most enjoyable and exciting football had ever been for me as a fan of that club. So I can't, I don't know how you ever thank a manager, you know, for that. And it's just a personal, I would have happily had him as the manager and got relegated. But that's me personally, because I just loved him that much.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So that's the fan in you. But also I see something, maybe it connects to your style of football as well, that you love this intensive play, a bit proactive, dominating wherever, in which phase of the game.
Yeah, I would say that you know, if quality of player was all on par and resources, yeah, absolutely, like dominating the ball, exciting, high intensity. I really like teams that press aggressively from the front and don't give the opposition any time and space on the ball. So, I would say that it was certainly very much aligned with some of my own personal values and beliefs on football.
Okay. You're already wondering off, because there's 25 more items that's coming from your office. So let's go back to that first.
Yeah. So when I was packing up, we'd had a chat, didn't we? And you just said, what kinds of things have you got in my coach's room? So I have all sorts of stuff. I am a renowned hoarder and collector of things that mean something to me. So, for example, like cards. Do you know, if a student, you know, wrote me a card, you know, saying thank you for, you know, being a supervisor and
why help. Is that important for you? So okay, that you give them, okay, that's a compliment, but you save them, maybe they stand on the corner of your or on your desk or whatever. Why is it important for you to keep them there?
So I have them up on the wall so everyone can, you know, see all this stuff. I think for me it's like small reminders where I've made a difference or helped support somebody. And I always think that it's, do you know those moments where somebody gives something back? And, it, you know, like a card, most of these, do you know, they'll have like the students will have written, do you know, like this one.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, like when I read them.
This is like a card, like the smallest handwriting you can find, and the card is completely full.
Yeah, it just means a lot, you know. I don't know, in terms of, it's quite sentimental of me. I'm a bit of a sentiment, and I kind of do the same, you know. So, you know, on your journeys. So this one was 2012, 2013. So that's some of the women that I had the pleasure of working with, you know, at Stoke City. So, you know, in that, you've got young ladies that have gone on to play tier three, tier two. And then you've got like Hannah Hampton, the England goalkeeper. So small little things like that are, you know, really important to me. Or this one's like the Oxford under 16s from a few years ago. And I still keep in contact with, you know, a lot of them now. And those are little things that I really enjoy collecting. Or if we go to, like, with the boys at Watford, sometimes we go to, like, Premier League tournaments and you get these beautiful pendants from other clubs. So this one's, you know, like from Manchester United when we played them in the Truce Cup. So I'll have, you know, little mementos like that, or my, like, Premier League
memorabilia of your journey so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it's really just really important to have those keepsakes, because when I started football, as probably everyone does, we pick up a ball, don't we, and we just play the game. And at no point did I think when I was playing that football would have given me so many amazing life experiences. So, yeah, it's given me a lot of unexpected and rich moments in my life that I don't know what I would do without now if somebody took it all away from me.
So is it, well, this is my impression of you, but that because you are doing so much things that you need, let's say, some stuff around you to remind you what you're doing it for?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's not always easy. And in life and at different crossroads, sometimes it's easy to do, like take the path of least resistance or the path that's going to draw the least media attention. But for me, I always think, like, can I sleep at night? Do you know, can I sleep at night with the decisions that I've made? And I think that's really important to me. So, yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. Well, and you are such on a, such a diverse, well, it's all football content related. It's very diverse. So you're a coach, but you also are a lecturer. So you are on the practical spot. You're, well, Gerard Jones is the reason that you're sitting here. He called himself a pracademic. So practical and academic. You are pretty much the same, but you find yourself in a lot of different angles looking at football.
Yeah. And, yeah, Gerard, I had the brilliant story, I'm sure he won't mind me telling it, when we met. So Gerard and I connected in the last year, and on social media, I'd been like liking a couple of tweets about his PhD subject, and I started to share his ideas on search and scan, how that influences practice design at Watford. And, you know, as you do at in the academy system, you need to go and get your safeguard in and your first aid. And I booked onto this first aid course in the Midlands, you know, and you do the task.
You know what a first aid class is, or what it is?
It's just like where you get your like medical qualification, just in case there was an emergency with players.
Ah, okay, yeah, sure.
And we had to go and just get our accreditation ticked off for the next 3 years. And we were sat there and he was in the same room as me, but I didn't know. And we went out, they was doing a B license coach ed course at the same time. And I was stood out on the pitch and he joined me at lunch and we were just stood chatting. And I actually got out his presentation and I showed it to himself. So we found that absolutely hilarious. And we've been really close since. So, yeah, fantastic guy. And I've really enjoyed learning about some of his ideas. And on that day after the first aid, we actually stayed. So that course finished at 4:00 and we stayed until about 6:00, just me and him. With his presentation and his PhD and his ideas, just talking about, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean for players, practice design? Do we ever ask players for feedback or how they want? It was amazing just to have that time with him. So it's funny how the world works out.
Yeah, well, it's the reason why you're sitting here. So that's a very, very interesting connection, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but still, okay, you're going to a first, and now I understand the word first aid better. But I thought maybe it's something to do with university. No, it's just when somebody drops down, you know what to do. So you end up there and then you start talking football. But this is your constant moment. Okay, you are getting a lot of information. You have a lot of students around you that gather a lot of research. And at the same time, maybe later on the day, you are on the pitch yourself. With all this information that you're constantly getting, and how, for me, I would say, okay, you could reinvent yourself every day on the pitch if you want. How do you find the balance by, okay, in that part, I am a scientist. I look at new data. I'm looking at theories, but on the pitch, I should do whatever I feel is right or what is right at this point, and we don't know how I could shift it any day. Do you kind of get where I'm going?
Yeah, I think for me, In some footballing environments, not all, they are heavily supported and grounded by science and evidence, and some in other moments are not. It's more people's opinions. You know, I think this, you know, I did it this, or I saw X do it like that and it worked well. And that is, and at times can be quite conflicting. So for me, it's just about working out where, when, and who is receptive to evidence in conversations and ideas, and who perhaps isn't. And that's just, you know, like football, we live in a world where, you know, it's fairly common for, you know, a lot of managers and coaches at the top level are ex-pros and things like that. And experience, for me, I think above all else, is probably still king. Do you know, if we look at job interview, job descriptions and things like that, degrees, masters, PhDs are probably not commonplace yet. Maybe 10, 20 years down the line, they might be a bit more, or have a bit more currency. So I'm very mindful of how and what hats I wear at different times in different environments. But for me, I didn't play in the men's Champion League final, or I haven't played in the Premier League. So I haven't got those library of reference points and things that I can draw on to support player development, or, you know, we did this tactic once and we won this game at the top level in front of 40,000 fans. So I needed to think about what made me different, where and how I can add value to people, organizations, players. And then really it took me a huge amount of time to work out, you know, who I was and what my core values were that are consistent. And I'd say it's taken me about 8 years to do that. Was heavily inspired by a principal lecturer at the University of Hertfordshire called Dr. David Turner about philosophy and ideas. And I was lucky enough to share an office with him for about 7 years. He specialized in, you know, life history and the quest for expertise of high performance coaches. And also Pete Carroll, the American football coach, and just really trying to study about the philosophy and how important it is. And it's probably only the last 2 months I've got something that I'm happy to show and share people and get their feedback on, but took a really long time to find the anchors that kind of centre me across all of the environments and people and conversations. So yeah, it's difficult. Short answer is it can be difficult.
Sorry, I'm constantly thinking about saying what to say, what not to say. You just long answer. Yeah, I understand. Okay. But, and you said until 2 months ago, what, now I do have something that I could present. And what is that that you mean? Is it like a game model or a philosophy or methodology of your own, or what is, what do I have to think about?
So it's my philosophy. So my core values as a person. So it's,
okay, it's more personal as who you are.
Yeah, it's, I put it on a PowerPoint. So it looks really slick. It's, you know, animated and morphed. So I'll give you a little bit of context just at the start, you know, inspired by David, it's called like Surfing the Turbulence. So for me, it's got like a silhouette of Wembley at the bottom, which just symbolizes football. And I think football is ever changing. It's chaotic, it's vibrant. It's people, context, scenarios, and it changes at any given moment. And then in the middle, trying to like surf and navigate that turbulence is me as like a silhouette surfer. And then I've got like a gold heart, which replicates or represents like my values. And my values in a nutshell are compete. So like be the best version of yourself you can every day. And we can use the opponent to do that. Connect and collaborate, like work with people, understand them, care about them. That one is care. And I know we're going to come on to that a bit later. And the last one is just enjoy it, because these environments can be really tough at the top and hard, and, you know, coaches are super susceptible to burnout, and we miss big family moments and all of that stuff. So just make sure when you get a win or a player experiences some real success, we enjoy those moments.
Okay. And this is something that you drew up after 8 years. Okay, this is why I'm in football.
Yeah. And it changed. It changed a lot in the last 2 years, trying to just finalize it and think about it really critically. But I feel for me far more centered. Like I know who I am, and if somebody wants to give me a job, this is what, you know, this is what you're paying me to bring to your organization. And I think that that was a real turning point for me.
Coaches, we need your help to grow our audience. Rate us, like, subscribe, share this episode on your social media to help us grow. Because if we can grow, then we can continue to ask top coaches to inspire you. Well, let's take the opportunity to share a little bit about my journey, because you're like this, the 100th coach I'm talking to. And what I found, and I also looked at myself, is okay, we all at one point were on a pitch with a bag of balls and some cones, and then we are a coach. Whether you're 16, 18, or whatever, you're older, then on Sunday, all of a sudden you have a game. That's how everybody starts. Mm-hmm. And then if you are longer in that role, if you're longer in football, you start to realize it, everything that you do comes down of your idea of football. And your idea of football is connected to who you are as a person, exactly like you described. Mm-hmm. With your golden heart, and that you're surfing the waves of football, let's call it like that. Everybody has its own style. But what I never realized until these 100 talks, that, or I think a lot of young or starting coaches, that it's so directly connected, because everybody thinks, okay, now I'm a coach, I should learn everything about 4-3-3, and if opponent plays 4-4-2, then I have the solution, and then I am a good coach.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you, oh, no, that's not true. You just did, and I maybe just did. But hardly anybody tells you, but realize that every talk that you have with everybody is connected to who, to your values, to your core as a human being. This is not what they tell you. Realize that when you become a coach and you do it long enough, you start digging into yourself. Nobody tells you at the start. But it could be very valuable if coaches do this a little bit faster or a little bit early. It took you 8 years, which is relatively long.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was difficult. It was so difficult to get what it was that was in my head out and into something that I could talk about. And I just wondered, I was interested when you were talking about your journey. Have you got any values or ideas that you're centered on now that you can talk about?
Well, if I would put myself in the middle of a picture and put the heart there, the main thing is honesty.
Yeah.
For me, no matter what the interests are, I don't care if it's so conflicted from both sides or whatever the situation is. Honesty is my main value, I think. And I always strive for quality. Mm-hmm. And quality can lead to results or a nice style of play or development or whatever. But I think those are the two main values that I have. And yeah, I see football as the second most important thing in the world. I don't really know what else is there. So it's me, my family, and then football.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's very hard to realize it's the second most important thing in the world, because during the day, it's almost your most important thing in the world. So yeah, if you would hire me, that would be my picture, and that's what you get.
Yeah, I love that. I couldn't agree more. I think honesty is really important, you know, especially within your high performance staff team. I think that trust and honesty is absolutely key to performance success.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I noticed is that quality or striving quality can create moments where honesty is very brutal or hard, but I don't walk away from it. That's what I know for myself. So somebody's not good enough. It's not the nice thing to say. It's not easy. But if you're not honest, things can be very complicated. But what you do see in football is a lot. Okay, when things get hard, people tend to be less honest because it's easier. Okay. Yeah, I'm not really satisfied, but yeah, they beat around. Well, how do you say beat around the bush? Or they're not talking what it's really about.
Yeah,
it's football or business in football is exactly the same. That's my pitfall. If somebody would act that way to me, it's then we're on the wrong side. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely get that.
Yeah. So okay, but that journey of coaching, that's so interesting for everybody. And you have it. It's a journey of life, probably. So we're getting a little bit of a serious, a deep talk now. But this is what everybody discovers, I think.
Yeah, and I think after I kind of said my answer, you alluded to the fact, family and then football. And I think if you asked anybody, they'd probably say the same. But the reality is, at times that's quite confused and quite conflated. And I've shared this story before, but, my niece was born and I was out on the field delivering set plays to, the English uni team when we were trying to beat Scotland in the home nation. So the reality is we give a lot to football and we miss a lot of the big moments that, our families cherish and ideally would want us there for. And my personal journey has completely been intertwined with my professional journey and the big moments personally, happiness, loss, life, death have all influenced me as a person. And that no doubt has shaped how I would, speak to people, behave, empathize, understand. And I think that, that is a really important trait for a coach to have.
Yeah. Is it there? I think there's a connection with the environment in professional football and the way that people are cared for in that situation, because that was something that, well, if you go to your Twitter feed, there's an interesting article that you, mm-hmm. am I right, that you written on it as well? The title says, okay, yeah, he says that he's caring for me, but he's not really, something like that. Why did you got into this subject so much? Is it also because, it stands with your values?
Yeah, so it was born out of a lot of things, actually. So firstly, from an academic perspective, the lead author of that work is Colin Lewis. Colin Lewis is a good friend of mine. He and I did our master's together at Manchester Met, and he had a student at the time who was looking at this for his dissertation and asked if I wanted to get involved in it. It was also published with a Colin Cronin, who's like the lead author of Care Within the Field, into his special edition in Sports Coaching Review. So it was like right time, right people, right opportunity.
Just to get some context.
Yeah.
If I'm saying it right, you have a lead professor or something like the, I forgot the name, but he said, okay, I want to do this research. And then he finds different PhDs to help him with writing the article, right? That's for people that don't know how in details universities work or research works. This is how it's set up, right?
Yeah. So Colin Lewis, he would be interested in the area. And he might have a data set, so some interviews in this case. So he went out and he interviewed women's footballers, about their experiences of being cared for. And sometimes within the academia, like that landscape of people, there would be professors who specialize. So if you said to me, Bex, what is your specialism? I would say mentoring. Okay. Colm Cronin, who works with Colin Lewis at Liverpool John Moores, he's like the big professor of care. this is his area. And he opened a call where he said, oh, is there any researchers who want to publish on this area? And Colin had this data set. He had these interviews and he said, Bex, would you like to support and help me write it up? And the reason I said yes was because I've, full disclosure, sometimes felt that the women's game in its professionalization and its rapid growth now makes football and the product look great. You know, Sky Sports,
sure,
stadiums. But underneath that, where we have progressed so quickly, we haven't got practice right. We haven't got safeguarding right. We haven't got structures. We haven't got sustainability. So it's been this real balancing act, I think, for many people working in the women's game. We want to grow, we want to develop, we want, you know, of course we do. And then people are trying to catch up. And one of the offshoots and side effects of that is, unfortunately, coaching practice hasn't been good enough. And we haven't got a holistic package of support for athletes. I've seen it. I've seen it at some clubs. I've heard players, you know, they'll contact me and they'll want to speak to me about things that have happened or, you know, personal experiences that you have. So I wanted to say yes. And one of the key moments for me was Ultimate Goal season one. And they had us sitting around at St. George's Park in like a circle of, you know, honesty and sharing. And, you know, myself, Zoe, Eni Aluko, Rach Finnis-Brown, Rosie and Molly Kamita sat listening to 20 women's personal stories about how they, you know, continue to be racially abused, or, you know, this was happening to this young lady from their coach, or whatever it was, these comments or this lack of support, or couldn't get insurance for my ACL, nobody, you know. And it just, and that was the moment I just thought, this is another area that I would like to shine a light on. And it just was the perfect time for me to work with Colin. So the article you saw on my Twitter is the first one. And there's loads of reasons as to why coaches don't care in that. But then what we've done as a follow-up with a fantastic student I had called Evie Clark. Evie, ex-England Youth Internationals, played in the Women's Championship. We interviewed 15 women's championship footballers, and we're going to publish some of our findings from that. So that will be out in the next kind of year and a half. Okay. And we've asked, you know, a couple of people to come on board with that. But we have to shine a line on it, because we need to hear women's voices in this space. We need to shine a light up to ourselves and go, this is happening. If we acknowledge it's happening, then we can look to try and address it and move forward and improve it for those women, because some of the stories are absolutely harrowing. You know, you wouldn't wish it, you wouldn't want your family to go through that stuff. So I don't think, you know, we should expect players to have to think about that balance, have to deal with some of the examples that their coaches are putting them through and things like that.
Okay, and it has, is then the major finding of that study, okay, well, almost how you started, okay, the game has grown so much that, okay, it looks amazing on the outside, but the foundation is not strong enough to hold it. And that's why players are like dropping into an area where they just have to hope that somebody has the quality, because there are not enough people that have the quality.
Yeah, I think so. And what we find, and you know, in that paper, in the first section, we shine a light on, you know, Megan Rapinoe, you know, using her voice to highlight the lack of equality pay of the women's national team, or highlight, you know, what Eni Aluko went through, you know, standing up to racism that she experienced in the England team. And that's inspiring to me. That takes balls, that takes bravery, that, you know, that what those women are doing is fantastic. And more recently, you know, we've seen players like Georgia Stanway do interviews on online abuse, and those are the types of things we haven't quite caught up with. So the first key finding from the paper, that the first one that was published, it's like, it looks like the coach cares, but it's quite superficial. It's thin. And some of the reasons is because they want to win. They want to win at all costs. So I'll give you an example. You know, it's, you know, a player might be injured and they want to come off, and the coach is like, no, give me another 20 minutes. Those types of instances where they care more about themselves as the primary caregiver rather than genuine care and support of the athlete.
Yeah, I completely understand. I completely understand the example as well. And it's a big, well, it's a very interesting thing, because you've obviously looked into the women's game, but I think it's even a general issue within football and development of football, especially. Well, it could be on any level, because there's always personal interest involved of a coach, and you have to be, you really, well, maybe that's how we just got it. You really have to know where you stand for as a person to realize what you're doing. Because if you are a coach, because, and that could relate a little bit to me, I wanted to win also all the time.
Yeah. And
I definitely made decisions that were more in the interest of winning than in the interest of the team or the player. And looking back at it is very easy, but the main thing is that you know this, that you know that this is your pitfall. I think that's a part of education as well. If I hear your story, okay, what is the, if everybody knows what his good side and his bad side is, okay, this is very easy to say, because it's the hardest question out there. You took you 8 years, but, then you know what you do actually, because otherwise it's just purely based on your emotions and your feeling, and you're taking, I don't know, some, you're abusing situation, or you're misusing, I think that's a better word, situations. So that's interesting. Do you see the same thing in the men's game or in the boys phase where you are, or is it a bigger problem on the women's side?
I would say, from my perspective, with my experiences, I saw it more in the women's, but there's a caveat to that, because the where I've seen more of this, not maybe gendered per se, it's the high performance bit at the top.
Sure.
It's the senior football where you're paid to win, your job's probably on the line if you lose, or perhaps down in like a tier two or a tier three, there's that heightened sense of self-pressure to win. Those were the environments where this, you know, was happening the most. And it's, there's a, you know, an additional layer of that. And it's the support staff around these athletes. So, you know, do the women have somebody that they can go to in that environment that's not directly a coach who's going to select them, someone who's going to listen. And, you know, they were saying things like, if there is a physio or a member of support staff, you know, how qualified are they? And they raised some issues around, you know, like just touch, you know. So I think somebody gave an example of where the coach felt it was appropriate to deal with a player injury over the physio. And in my mind, I'm going, what now? That, you know, doesn't sound right. Like, what was your, you know, did you, because we all know what it's like, did you feel comfortable to speak out about that? You know, because then you bring in all of that, you know, pressure on yourself, and people look at you, and you could then become very outcast. And that's why I think what players like Ennie and Megan have done outwardly takes some real, you know, that takes a lot of doing, because, you know, Ennie was removed from England, wasn't she, for doing that and sticking to her values and beliefs. So I think that takes me back to that question, you know, like, have I done stuff today which means I can sleep peacefully at night? And for me, this is where this research is so important, because I'm hoping if I can collect some of this evidence, you know, and some of my other works on female coaches' experiences in coach education, we can all do better. That's the only reason that I do it, is to illuminate, hey, look, guys, I don't think this is quite right and acceptable. I don't think this, you know, should be going on. And how can we all work together to make coach education better for women, make women's footballing environments and clubs and organisations, how can we make all of that better, a better, more positive, caring place for women?
Is that the solution? More knowledge for the people that work in that environment?
I think so.
Better quality or a better education, better knowledge, better people, whatever.
With the care stuff, I'm going to go yes to education first. Although in the article I published on some of the experiences women had had on coach education, I would say I think we're beyond it educating people. I think you have to start over with some of that recruitment. You need to get female tutors. You need to get people who can govern safe spaces. And you need to get people who represent your organization's core values. There's only so many times I can be called lad. Like, it just, for me now, it wears really thin, and that male homogenous masking, I just think we need people who can deliver an inclusive educational experience, because at universities we don't seem to have that problem. Like, I don't stand in a lecture theatre and go, girls, boys, you don't use that language. So it's a traditional language orthodoxy culture that is continuously replicated, and it just needs to be disruptive, and we need to be more inclusive. So I think we're beyond educating. I think we need to start again in education, but in this, for like coaches, I think we can still do that for them, you know, shine a light on how athletes feel, and do some workshops on it and get this information out into the world. And then we'll see if we can influence practice first. We haven't got to that bit yet. Whereas I think with some of the other stuff, you know, we have, and we need a change of route.
Yeah. Coaches, I hope this episode inspires you. But if you want more inspiration, go to thecoachesroom.com, start your 14-day free trial, and get access to more than 35 masterclasses. The masterclasses are given by top coaches, and we add more masterclasses every month. So go to thecoachesroom.com, start your 14-day free trial. Is it, what I'm hearing is, okay, that it's mainly in, okay, the connection, the relationship, and the communication. It's, I haven't heard football in this last 3 minutes once. So, but in my experience, and I don't know the English system or any other country system, so it's not fair for me to judge, but I'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
All coach education is focused on the game. Maybe 1 hour in those 40 hours of coach education, yeah, but it's important that you connect with your players. But most of the time, is you have to be the leader, you have to be on top of the team, you have to be the authority. That's the way that I was coached. If you say something, you have to demand from your players. Your players should listen. That's what I've been learned.
Yeah,
100 of these talks along the line, nobody is talking about football. Everybody's talking about being yourself, and everybody's talking about the connection with people.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that ever in any coach education. Yeah, maybe at the pro league, because they don't have any, they've discussed all the football things, so there's nothing left.
Yeah.
And then it's, but you have to manage your team, you have to be the manager, but still not, who are you? What is your pitfall? Okay, there's one guy, I talk to him often. He's the national team coach of U15. He's very aware, and he did several trainings, but he's already a national team coach, so they invest heavily in those guys.
Yeah.
But every year you have 25 to 100 people, at least in the Netherlands, but everywhere, getting a UEFA A license. They know everything about football. But at that level, football is hardly important because everybody knows football already. And yeah. In my opinion, that's where the problem is. And not even men or women's game. It's not just having competent people at that level that know what they're doing and know how to interact with others.
Yeah. No,
that was not rant, by the way.
No, I'm all up in that rant. I think football, the tactics is the easy bit. That's the easy bit. You know, the system, the formation, the analysis, that's for me, that's the easy bit. The relationships is the hard bit. It's like dealing with people, the scenarios, the real world. That's the challenging bit. And I would agree that our coach education system primarily focuses on techniques, tactics, physical. We've begun to diversify into social and psych, but areas like micropolitics, emotion regulation and management for coaches, care, how and what is your philosophy, some of those really core, you know, as well, like basic pedagogical understanding of like learning theories and theories of learning. That's really important stuff that we haven't included yet in our traditional way of thinking about coaching.
Okay, it is if I turn it around, it is also interesting that if you are there and you're in this group and you see each other once every 2 weeks and you have to sit in a circle, okay, this was how I was as a child, blah, blah, blah. It is not easy.
No.
But it is what should help you. Well, you did I'm not going to mention it anymore, but you did, took you 8 years and I'm maybe in that phase of, well, okay, writing down, okay, who do I want to be? What are my goals? How do I want to be? What is quality or success or whatever? It also maybe is an age thing because I don't know how old you are, but I'm 38 and this is exactly the phase that I'm in. But as a 25-year-old, you should learn this as well, especially when you work at the elites. Well, okay, we're starting a rant again, but I think the main thing is that, well, my main opinion is that invest in yourself. And if a coach education course doesn't do it, then do it yourself.
I think so. And that's why your network is absolutely crucial. So in my network, I've got football people, I've got academics, I've got people from different sports, players, physical, S&C, physio, you know, surround yourself with a diversity of people that can help you do that bit if you're missing it from traditional routes. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not going to help you only in football. It's going to help you everywhere.
Yeah.
Because a lot of coaches still have, let's say, a side job. And if you know what you want, it's also going to help you in other things. So that makes it easier as well. Okay, yeah. Let's go back to football a little, because otherwise we're going off. No, but we talked about, let's say, the care part, the performance environment, and about the problems. We talked a little bit about the solution, but if you look more in general on maybe what a good coach is or what a good coach should have, what is, in your opinion, at least the foundation that a good coach should have, no matter what the elite level or grassroots, that what are the major things a coach should have?
Well, what a fantastic question. I think, yeah. So I would go, firstly, the care. I think they have to care. And one of the points from the paper that is coming out, and quite worryingly, was that out of all 15 players in working in that championship, they said that they felt their coaches didn't have what they described as caring conversations. Like, how are you? How's the rehab going? How's your studies? You know, how are you coping with the work-life balance? So I think to build effective relationships in a high performance environment, you need to engage with caring conversations. That would be the first one. So that's why I'm so passionate about this research. Probably the second one, which I think I've put care first, but the next one is subject knowledge. So you do need to know football. And I think we live in a world now where football gets you part of the way, techniques, tactics, skills. But you also need to have some knowledge of S&C, some psych, some social, some analysis skills, some sociological skills, and you need to understand learning. So, yes, you've got the football bit, but we're diversifying and we're seeing all these brilliant roles pop up now, aren't we, where we've blended analysis and coaching, or we've blended cultural coaching, sociology with techniques and tactics. And then I think for me, it's something which I would describe as like maybe like energy, enthusiasm, personality. Do you know, something that makes you like a real authenticity. Because, you know, if I have all the subject knowledge in the world and I'm bland and tone deaf or whatever we want to, no one's going to listen to it, are they? Do you know what I mean? No one's going to listen. If you don't care about them and you've got all this subject knowledge, they're not having you. So I think all of those things, if I had to really be hone in on some stuff, maybe those three were the top three that come into my mind. What about you? Good coach. What come into your mind?
Somebody asked me on Facebook yesterday, so who do you want to, what kind of top coach do you want to listen to in our podcast? I asked, and to get some inspiration, and said, somebody define top coach or define a good coach. I wrote down, I don't know if it's are the exact words, but somebody that can manage and develop people, mm-hmm. and at the same time has a clear idea of the game. Yeah. I thought that, okay, that was my short version.
Yeah,
it almost sets everything in the same order that you were saying. If you don't know, if you can't connect with your players, the thing while you were talking is, if you cannot connect with players, you're never going to teach them anything. But during a game, they're going to take care of the game anyway. They don't need you. They know the rules. Maybe they don't win, or maybe they are less successful if it works out well. But if you put the players in a game, it doesn't matter if there's a coach or not, because they know when it's a throw-in. They know when it's a corner kick. They know that halftime they have to go into the dressing. They don't need anybody to tell them that.
Yeah.
So if there is no connection, you're never going to learn them how to help them, or you can never help them. And players know this. It happens every day. Well, they're in the meeting room. Yeah, we have to do this and this. And half of the players that is not connected goes one ear in, the other one out. And on the pitch, they do whatever they want, even at elite level, at the highest level.
Mm.
So first it comes with connection, and then it comes with knowledge, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities there for what I said and what you said. And something that it's just clicked as you were talking for me is, I'm big on helping the players to help themselves.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it for them. I'm okay with chaos and conflict, and I'm okay with that. But we work together to solve it. I don't like solving problems or doing things for people. I think it's far more empowering for them to do it for themselves.
Yeah, I think we have to really, they don't need us.
No.
We can only help them. But the hard thing is, we think as coaches that they need us.
Yeah.
And the other way around is completely, it's completely the other way around for us. If we want to be successful coaches, we need the players.
Yeah.
We cannot be a successful coach without players. That doesn't work.
No.
It's completely off balance relationship, and we should really be aware of this.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Okay, interesting. Okay, we're already up to 52 minutes.
time is and I've only probably ticked off two of your points.
Yeah, well, I have my notes here. Well, I'm not going to go into all of them. But we had some books. Your vision on coaching. Well, your vision on coaches. That you summarized that we did care. And then, well, if people want to know more about you, I would definitely recommend to go through your Twitter feed, because it says something about you, what you care about, and the knowledge that you bring out in the articles, etc. Okay, I have two more questions.
Yeah, of course.
First of all, most important for me, who should we talk to next? Let's start with that first.
Oh, I was so conflicted when I was thinking about this. So look, with my new Loughborough hat on, I'd be recommending maybe like Jamie Clapham, the men's coach, or Izzy Martin, the women's coach. Okay. With my Watford hat on, I'd be saying maybe Rob Morris or Luke Giorgio. Or with my female fantastic role model coaches in the game right now, you should get on here, probably like Olivia Bedford, Vicky Jepson, or Ali Speechley.
Okay, I can imagine the first two work at, you said they work at the university, the second two work at Watford, the last three, I don't know, who are they?
So Lydia is the Leicester City women's manager in the Super League.
Okay.
Vicky Jepson is the Tottenham women's assistant manager. And Ali Speechley is just an all-round fantastic person who thinks differently, and she's currently working at Chelsea with the Girls Academy.
Okay. Well, we'll do afterwards to see which way. No, you can do it now. Which way do you want to push the podcast? Which one do you think? Or pick one out of all three categories and we'll just try to fit them in.
I'd go Loughborough, go Izzy, out of the women's go Lydia, and at Watford go for Rob.
Okay. Well,
and it's up to you. You can pick whoever you think's going to add.
That's the best thing for me. I don't pick, my guests pick.
I've given you a bit of a headache then. I'm so
excited. You're not the first one. Yeah, I know one. Oh, but I know this one. And they give me five phone numbers. I have a huge list. And the good thing is coaches are very busy, so I cannot reach them all, or they don't all have time, so we'll find a way.
Yeah, they're all brilliant people. So, I think you'd enjoy those.
Okay, great. Well, let's chase them, but I need you for that. But we'll do that outside of the recording. And I do have a last question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I know where you would want to go, but what would be your main advice? Because we have coaches from all levels listening. So we've been talking about the elite level. We've talked on the science part, care part, whatever. We have a lot of maybe ambitious or young coaches. You've told us, okay, what is most important?
Yeah.
What would be your advice to coaches?
I'd say be really okay in your own skin. You know, try and work out who you are to start with. Be really brave in terms of taking on challenges or connect, you know, reaching out to someone on social media, going for coffee with people or trying to get into study visits. Just, you know, put yourself out there and out of your comfort zone, because I found the world of football really open. Do you know, even if they you know, people don't know me, I found a lot of the time people are really open and helpful and supportive. You just need to ask. Be okay making mistakes. I think it's a marathon, not a sprint. I've made my fair share of mistakes. I've had lots of setbacks. And the core reason, you know, I continue to move forward is probably just that resilience. That resilience, I think, is so important. I don't go into the world of football coaching with your eyes shut. It is hard. It is challenging. But I think at its best, you get experiences, joy, happiness that is completely unrivaled in other walks of life.
Okay, great. Well, the first part, I completely agree as well. Mm. It's so, well, if I have an easy reason to call anybody, because I have a podcast, do you want to talk, blah, blah, blah. So I always have a reason to call anybody. But this is also how it works for any coach. If you can just, there are so many people out there that share knowledge. They do it for a reason. They want to share, and they expect once in a while that somebody pops up with a question or can you explain more? I think you would be the same person. If somebody sends you a DM or whatever, you were if you find the time while driving on a that you're going to reply, of course. So invest heavily in your network. Couldn't agree more. And I think I would like to invite you to our coaches network as well. We have a group of 50 coaches all throughout Europe. Come together once a month, all elite level coaches. Yeah, I have to. That's one standard there. But I think you would be fit in, and you would be a nice fresh breath of air in that group.
Thank you very much. I welcome that opportunity with open arms.
Great. And the second part, if you're not willing to hit your head in football, then find another job, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your advice? What have you got any bits of golden nuggets that you would share?
Well, I would say, and that connects with the memorabilia that you held up when we started, realize that you have to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
To give an example, I was like this game model tactics coach in the beginning. If we scored, this was completely logical to me because that was the way that I thought of how it should go, which is absolutely bullshit. But okay, that was my belief at that point.
Yeah.
So I hardly cheered when we scored a goal. Again, completely ridiculous, but it's what I did because, yeah. So after looking back at it, I should have enjoyed every moment. Because you have to celebrate your success, not think that your successes or whatever happens is normal because you thought it through. No, it's your reward. That's a completely different approach. So most coaches, I think, either have a day job, work their freaking ass off 60, 70 hours a week. No, 40 hours in a job and then 30, 40 hours on top of that with football, trying to be something in that game. And if you can enjoy it, really do it.
Yeah.
And don't get caught up in struggles that you're tired, whatever. No, trying to find this moment. And the same works for elite coaches. Okay, it's maybe the best job in the world, but it's they give you a 40-hour contract. But we all know that you work 70.
Yeah.
And it's how do you say it? It's the context that it's created. But while you're in it, yeah, make sure that you enjoy it. I think that's the most, I think that's my golden nugget. And maybe it comes from a little of regret of my side, but yeah, that I would definitely say, yeah.
No, I like that. I think sometimes we forget to celebrate in the best moments and enjoy it. So I think that's a fantastic bit of wisdom to leave everyone with.
Okay, well, you're the first one that asked me for advice or asked me to give some advice. So that's a new one as well.
You've
took 40 episodes, but
yeah, I mean, you've sat in, like you said, 40 of these. So what fantastic opportunity to consolidate all of your experiences and thoughts and share that with everyone.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the idea of, getting knowledge and just push it out there. Yeah. If I can help or inspire some coaches, then my goal is set or then that my job is done. Yeah. Hey, Rebecca, I want to thank you very much for this session.
No, it's been honestly an absolute pleasure. And
was it a Zen session for you?
Pardon?
Was it Zen? Because you said, I want to unwind a little during your podcast. I said, okay, whatever. But yeah.
I'm going to say you delivered on your promise of a Zen moment. This has been very relaxing, very enjoyable, and taken me away of all of the hustle and bustle of moving boxes and office stationery backward and forward. So thank you very much.
I wish you a lot of good luck in your new role.
Thank you very much.
And I will continue to follow you. You are invited for the coaches group. And hopefully we'll do this again in a year and see how you're doing then. If you're still the voice note, the chasing woman, doing everything she can. But at least now you have one role. But maybe it makes it life a little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it. I look forward to connecting with you in the future. And thank you very much for having me on.
Okay. Speak soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you like this episode, Share it with your colleagues, share it with friends, share it on social media, like, subscribe, do whatever you do best and help us grow. Because the bigger we are as a podcast, the bigger and the more inspirational names we can invite to inspire you. And do not forget to pick up your 14-day free trial at thecoachesroom.com. With your free trial, you have access to all our masterclasses, both the live ones and the on-demand ones. Coaches from top European academies share their knowledge and you can watch it. So go to thecoachesroom.com and pick up your 14-day free trial.